Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of Mostly Peaceful Latinas. I'm your host, Bella.
And I'm Linda.
And before we get started, please help us out. Thank you so much for waiting for us in the chat while we got our sound together. But please, if you have not liked the video and you're in the chat, please like the video. That should give us at least 17 likes, which helps us get into the algorithm. If you're not subscribed, what are you doing? Per usual, Mostly Peaceful Latinas is not funded by the Illuminati or the lizard people. We are here. We have to thank our sponsors over at Century H2O and under the sink right water here. Filtration system. If you're focused on your health, like so many people currently are at the moment, where you are aware about what you're putting into your body, if you find yourself consistently reading the back of labels at the grocery store and you do not have a water filtration system, then once again, what are you doing? Century H2O is significantly more affordable than any other product on the market. Just as effective, just as competitive.
Yes.
It helps lift all the gunk out of your water while also adding more into your water to make you healthier. And not just that, but you'd also be supporting patriots in the process.
Absolutely. Century H2O is made in the USA in Arizona, and it's under $300. You can use our code MPL10 to get a small percentage off. And without further ado, today we are going to have a very special guest. I don't want to mess up his name, so Bella, I'm going to leave it up to you.
We have a packed show.
We have a packed show.
Coming up first, we have Stefan I'm going to mess it up.
Oh, you're
Sorry, Stefan. He's in the waiting room, but we're going to bring him on. But guys, we're going to talk a little bit about Vivek Ramaswamy and his lead or almost lead over Ron DeSantis. Yeah. Everybody thought that Ron DeSantis was going to be a shoo-in to take that second position under Trump, but It's looking kind of rough.
This is actually something that Trump predicted. He said that he would actually catch up to young Vivek, that there was a lot of talk about him and he was doing great. And I think today Team Trump actually congratulated him. So it's really interesting. I've been watching closely. I've also been watching a few of the controversies that people like DC Drano have brought up. So we'll ask him. Without further ado, bring him on. Let's talk to this man and learn a little bit more about Vivek.
Good evening. Thanks for having me. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Stefan. It's great to have you here.
So can you tell us one more time how to pronounce your last name? Sorry.
I know. It's an eye chart. It's Stefan Mihailu, about as easy as to pronounce as Vivek Ramaswamy. So I've been called.
I see. Was it kind of like part of the job description? Was exactly how many syllables does your last name have? You're hired.
Yeah. Vivek didn't find a deputy communications director named Joe Smith. He had to find someone with a similar challenging last name.
I love that. So tell us a little bit about Vivek. What do you currently do for Vivek?
Yeah, so I'm the deputy communications director. I work on social media. One of my specialties is rapid response. You know, don't hold it against me. I was a former television news anchor. It wasn't fake news back then. Former elected official, and then I didn't run again. I was the county controller, kind of like a watchdog position in Buffalo, New York. And then I joined Vivek's campaign. One of my specialties is social media. And, you know, you mentioned Ron DeSantis and that Vivek is now in second place polling right there with Ron DeSantis. And you should have seen his team and surrogates melting down on social media today.
Oh, we've seen. We know. We've been watching and keeping close eye on the situation for several months. Actually, one of the things that we'll bring up is that we've noticed some commentary from the DeSantis team where they've made claims where, oh, Vivek's popularity is all, it's only on Twitter. It doesn't actually exist, which is an interesting point for them to bring up because it's something that we've felt is very representative of the DeSantis campaign and kind of this AstroTurf strategy that they've taken to Twitter to take over the MAGA vote, if you will, where it seems like Vivek has definitely positioned himself in very much in an embracement and support of MAGA core values, if you will.
Yeah, 100%. You know, Vivek always says he's not running against Donald Trump. And I believe Ron DeSantis is doing exactly that. Vivek just says, I'm running for president. It's as simple as that. And, you know, newspapers had written stories today that Vivek is actually the most traveled candidate out of anyone. This week, he's in 5 states in 4 days. He's not taking anything for granted. And Vivek says all the time that he deeply respects Donald Trump and the work he did in 2016. He just wants to lead a national revival and make that America First agenda to just go to the next level. I think it's a big difference between Vivek's campaign and Ron DeSantis. It appears as though the DeSantis team is just attacking Donald Trump, attacking MAGA, and Vivek Ramaswamy wants no part of that. He's running for president on his own, and he says all the time, I'm not running against anyone. He's just simply running for president of the United States.
Right. So I have a few questions. I've been following Vivek, and that's how I reached out to the team, and I find him to be a very interesting candidate, also very charming, and I think he has more of the people touch or can connect more with people versus Governor DeSantis,
very
who
personable.
We voted for him, we supported him, but he is a very he doesn't have that charm. He's not able to connect with voters. However, I've noticed, especially this week, that there's been a few controversies coming out of big influencers in the MAGA Twitter sphere, if you want to call it. The first one being DC Drano, who brought up some old tweets from Vivek that supported masks, I think supported vaccines, supported, I forgot the other thing that he posted, but it was mostly that stuff during COVID. I mean, I don't necessarily hold that over people's heads, because I do know that during COVID, a lot of people were scared. A lot of people panicked at first. Some people thought that it was actually good to mask and get the vaccine. So I'm not going to necessarily crucify Vivek or anybody for that. But what's your take on that when it comes, when people are digging up these old tweets from Vivek, somebody as big as DC Drano, who has a lot of influence and power within MAGA. What do you have to say about those tweets and that small controversy?
Yeah, happy to talk about that. You know, when it comes to masks, conservatives mm-hmm. should be happy that one of the Supreme Court nominees that Vivek said he would nominate to the highest court in the land actually knocked down a lot of the mask mandates. And when Vivek was in the state of Ohio at the very height of the COVID crisis, he was part of the commission that was leading part of the state's response in Ohio. And he actually left because he had a lot of the common sense solutions that they just ignored. He's absolutely positively against a vaccine mandate. And some of those other issues that you mentioned, like World Economic Forum, Vivek was never a member, never. They named him without.
Yeah, that was the other thing I was going to ask.
Yeah, it's an easy one to talk about, because Vivek was never a member. They named him without permission. WEF is known, a World Economic Forum, they're known for their very shady scheme of naming prominent people without permission just to fool and manipulate the masses. Vivek was never a member, never attended, and he sued them. And only until he did, WEF basically stuck their tail between their legs and admitted that he was never a member.
Right. Stefan, another question that has come up, and I'm not sure if it's a hard question to answer, but I'm sure that's one that's been asked of you, and I want to give you the opportunity to address it, is that recently it surfaced that Vivek received a fellowship from
that's
Soros
what he's talking about.
Brothers organization. Oh,
yeah, totally separate from the World Economic Forum. That's a very fair and a good question. So when Vivek was 25 years old, over a decade ago, he and hundreds of other students accepted a scholarship that was partially paid for by a relative of George Soros, who's been dead for 10 years. No connection to George Soros whatsoever. It was a scholarship that hundreds of other students received, and the guy is dead. So it's interesting how Vivek is getting all these attacks from the DeSantis camp and all these Twitter trolls because of the fact that he's rising in the polls and is now in second place. But these are easy questions. And Vivek says all the time, if he can't sit for tough questions, he should not be the leader of the free and Western world.
Yeah, something that I really liked about him, and you know, that Ron DeSantis and his surrogates just simply can't admit into, was that Vivek was actually the only candidate who spoke against HB 269, Florida bill, HB 269, which is the anti-Semitism bill, which is really a hate speech bill. And they keep telling us it's not a hate speech bill. It's actually extending property rights, and it's going to protect police. And if you don't like it, you're anti-Semitic and you hate Jewish people. And it's just like, no, it's not. You guys found a legal loophole to punish speech that you don't like. You passed it. You went over to Israel and you signed the law. And I saw that Vivek got a lot of nasty comments and hate on Twitter, because that's really where all the controversies and all the debate is taking place. You know, did he mention anything about that? Like, what's his stand on stuff like that? Or
can you share what his hot take is on HB 269 and kind of more so, I guess I'm more interested in hearing what's his take on DeSantis signing HB 269, a bill that, as Linda mentioned, does encroach on our First Amendment right to free speech, and that he actually signed it out of the country in Israel.
In Israel, right.
Well, let me turn the clock back just a little bit, if I may, to when Donald Trump was first indicted by Alvin Bragg. And literally within minutes after that indictment came out in New York State, Vivek Ramaswamy right away said, the first thing I'm going to do is pardon Donald Trump if I'm elected president of the United States. Ron DeSantis was quiet for days.
Yes, he was.
The big difference between Vivek and a Ron DeSantis type is that Vivek has the courage of his convictions, doesn't need to talk to a pollster or a focus group. Ron DeSantis was silent. Again, you know, going back to the indictments when Vivek Ramaswamy, he flew down to Florida. He's the only candidate to do so and say, you know what? I'm standing on the steps of this courthouse to say I'm going to pardon Donald Trump. Now, that very specific bill is one that I have not spoken to Vivek Ramaswamy about. But one thing that he has talked about was the fact that Ron DeSantis, basically, when it comes to the case of Disney, cutting these kind of sweetheart deals when it comes to putting in legislation at the very last minute that exempted Disney when it comes to free speech and issues like that. And Vivek called him out on Meet the Press and things of that nature. And I think that's a big difference between Vivek Ramaswamy and Ron DeSantis. Again, look no further than Donald Trump. Vivek says all the time, I'm running for president, and it would be a lot easier for him to win if Donald Trump were out of the picture. But he does not want to win that way. And he's defending the fact that it's a hyper-political and partisan attack on Donald Trump. It's a weaponization of the Justice Department. He does not want to win that way, the presidency of the United States. He defended Donald Trump. Ron DeSantis did not.
Not only, I want to actually correct you, Stefan, not only did he not defend him, he actually held a press conference and in very self-serving commentary towards the injustice that Donald Trump is currently facing, he dropped a little funny where he made light of the situation by saying that he didn't have experience with paying off hookers. Yeah. That really wasn't his thing. Then he realized that it was a targeted attack. So not only did Ron DeSantis not stand up for Donald Trump, he actually went out of his way to create part of the problem that we're seeing of this narrative being built. And it's definitely something that I think we can both agree is something that most MAGA supporters look at Vivek and they can respect him for it. And I think that that's a lot of the shift that we might be seeing in the polls right now, is that you handling this campaign on Twitter, I'm sure that you can attest to this, that the DeSantis campaign has really their strategy is exceptionally toxic. It's some of the most toxic political commentary that we've seen in the last 6 years that we've been doing commentary. Yeah. You know, we had huge platforms during one of the most divisive elections that this country has ever seen in 2020. And we never heard the vile and disgusting things that we've heard from DeSantis camp. I mean, we've been told to go back to our countries to clean toilets, a commentary on our looks. What we've seen from Vivek is that there is a very clear respect towards Donald Trump, his accomplishments, and that MAGA
and also
base.
The base, right? So he was very popular. Did you attend the Turning Point USA event in Palm Beach this past weekend?
I did last year. I traveled with the campaign at the very beginning in New Hampshire, but I was not at Turning Point USA. But, you know, Vivek just hit it out of the park. Not only
he was a star.
Florida. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the reason is, again, because Vivek always says he's not running against Donald Trump in any way, shape, or form. Not at all. He actually says, I'm running for America, and I want to build on Donald Trump's America First agenda. You know, when you talk about sincerity of the candidates, too, that's something you just can't fake. I was a former elected official, and either have a connection with people or you don't. You can't teach it to someone. You can't teach that sincerity. And I can speak for Vivek that when he talks about his America First agenda, destroying the deep state, you know, returning America to that shining city on a hill, he connects with people. And that's why he's now in second place with Ron DeSantis, and he's dropping like a rock.
Let me, there's a new article that just came out a few hours ago from ABC, and it says Ron DeSantis is planning a campaign reboot as he struggles to close the gap with Trump. The DeSantis campaign officials tell NBC News that there's a shift to less of Florida focus, more lean events, and an insurgent approach. What do you have to say about that?
I mean, when it comes to that, it's reminiscent of Jeb Bush in 2016. That's exactly how that campaign feels. You know, it's totally different than how Vivek Ramaswamy is running for president. He's earning every single vote. I mean, he's going to these states. He's going to town halls, diners, things of that nature, not just cherry picking media outlets to talk to. Vivek will talk to anybody. I mean, look what happened at the time we got on CNN. I mean, the guy got fired for taking on Vivek. Yeah. Go on MSNBC and NBC. He's not afraid of anybody. And I think that's what voters are seeing. And that's why he's surging to second place, now tied with Ron DeSantis, which blows my mind.
Because it's crazy.
It's beautiful. Yeah. We love to see it.
It's really mind-blowing,
You know, with all due respect to Vivek, Ron DeSantis has spent the last 2 years garnering incredible press all over the country for having this iron fist in Florida and keeping Florida free and where woke goes to die. And this entire narrative that we've seen built up over the last 2 years where, you know, everything was set for him to be the natural person to go up against Donald Trump. And to see Vivek that didn't have this media hype of accomplishment, you know, like Ron DeSantis sneak up on him, I think says a lot to just how unlikable Ron DeSantis is.
I think also you know, it goes to show that what I said on Twitter, number one, is that Trump supporters are not racist, and the majority of these people are not, because if they want a guy whose last name is Ramaswamy, right, is that how you say it?
Yeah.
You don't have the racism that they claim that MAGA has. Think about that for one. And two, I think with the DeSantis campaign is that they insulated Ron DeSantis. It's like they call him the bubble boy because he was only allowed to speak to the Florida Standard and Florida Voice News. Now, all of a sudden, he's going to go on Megyn Kelly. She was begging him to go for months. He wouldn't go on. And he was allowed to go on Dave Rubin and Ben Shapiro. That's
He also just made a comment about Trump's indictment on, I want to say, 2 nights ago. He finally mentioned Trump's name because we've been saying that he's like Voldemort to Ron DeSantis, where he spent quite some time without mentioning Trump's name. Right. So when the raid came up, he mentioned how the raid at Mar-a-Lago was unfair, but never once mentioned Trump's name. When the first indictment happened, didn't mention Trump's name. So we've seen him have this behavior, and actually 2 nights ago, and I think that it's very closely linked to what's happening in the polls with Vivek, he changed his strategy and he said that what was happening to Donald Trump was unfair and that the DOJ was being weaponized against him. And I think that that's very represent. I've also noticed that a lot of the surrogates online seem to be matching up with that narrative. And I think that it is descriptive of what this article that Linda's referring to, which is that they are trying to change the strategy because they've realized that going head first into MAGA isn't going to be the way to attract the vote.
Let me ask you when, you know, we're about to be done with the segment, but what do you foresee? Because obviously Donald Trump is sitting in the polls. He's more than likely going to be the nominee. So what do we see in Vivek's future? Would he be open to a Trump-Vivek ticket, maybe working in his administration? What do you foresee in the event that obviously he's not able to become president?
Yeah, every conversation I've ever had with Vivek Ramaswamy is he's running for president of the United States to become president and commander-in-chief in 2024. And again, he always says he's not running against Donald Trump. He's not running against anyone. He's running for the White House. I think the reason why he's surging in the polls and now has cut up to Ron DeSantis is that Vivek Ramaswamy and Donald Trump are the only business owners and political outsiders in this race. That's it. And if you look at Vivek's agenda, way back in February, he talked about bombing cartels and using the military to secure the border. Back in February, he talked about shutting down the FBI, shutting down the Department of Education. And then in June, out of nowhere, Ron DeSantis says the same thing. And people aren't going to be fooled that he's basically taking Vivek's agenda, Donald Trump's agenda, and trying to take it as his own. So the debates are going to be huge for Vivek at the end of August in Milwaukee. And he plans on running for the president in 2024. And at the end of the day, let voters decide. But I think what's telling, and I'll close by saying this, you know, you ladies mentioned, again, when the multiple indictments that came through with Donald Trump, the very first candidate to come out and say it's wrong, the Justice Department should not be weaponized to attack him, it's wrong to basically try and take him out using the FBI. One candidate did that, Vivek Ramaswamy, not Ron DeSantis.
Right. That's true. Thank you so much for coming by today. Hopefully sometime we'll be able to have Vivek on the show as well. So put in a good word for us. We really appreciate it. We're going to continue to closely watch his campaign and support in any way that we can. And you can always come on the show. So thanks.
Much appreciated.
Thank you so much, Stefan. All right, guys. So tell us in the comments, what are your thoughts on Vivek? Actually, let's go right into some of our contributions here. I'll start off with David because it's Vivek related. David, thank you so much. Always coming through. The true Chad. I respect Vivek. I think he has a very deep understanding of the problems facing our country and that he has a great plans to address them. I think he will make an amazing member of Trump's cabinet and hope to see him around for a long time. I agree. I like that guy.
Yeah.
I like that he stood up for Donald Trump. I like that he's going against the establishment. I'm super satisfied with the answers that I got in regards to the Soros scholarship and the WEF because, and this is actually will be a good segue to go into the Sound of Freedom. We live in a time of hyper sensitivity and paranoia. I think particularly like within the circles that we're in, you know, people just want truth. And I get that. But I think that we've fallen into a point of heightened paranoia where we don't leave any room for Occam's razor. Just like, what is the simple answer? A fellowship is just a scholarship that's awarded to a lot of different people. And just because you received the scholarship doesn't mean that you were somehow privy to special dark plans that a person's siblings has. So I did think that it was a bit of a stretch, and I kind of saw it that way immediately, where too often we are seeing that people of good on our side, people of influence, anybody that's driving change automatically gets smeared by this tactic of smear by association. And we need to be careful with that because what we've done is that the people that rise up in these movements, whether it's in child sex trafficking, running for politics, doing election integrity, the people that run into leadership positions in these groups, for the most part, I'm sure that there's some people that are inauthentic, but the people that are doing this sacrifice a lot. They sacrifice their personal life. They sacrifice quality of life, their privacy, their rights as Americans. These people are persecuted. We've experienced that firsthand. So we can tell you that this is very true. So it's already such a brave thing to stand up and be a leader and challenge things, to then have your own side diminish your work by you made a triangle with your hands, or, you know, you once had lunch at a restaurant where George Soros did. Like, that kind of association doesn't do us any favors, because what we're doing is that we're debilitating our own movement by killing our own leaders, our own influence, the people that can help grow our message and get it out to the world. So we need to be really careful about allowing ourselves to simply believe something because we saw that somebody stitched two pictures together and put a little red square and an arrow around it and said, you know, watch whatever. We need to be very rational and pragmatic with our thought process when we're taking in this information to ensure that we haven't fallen into a place of self-detrimental paranoia,
right?
Which is where I think that unfortunately the movement is at. And clearly it makes a lot of sense given that we're in really dark times after what happened in 2020, after what we've experienced with January 6th. I get it that people are very paranoid, but we also have to be observant that what if you're wrong and you are attacking the very person that has stood up in a position of leadership to say the things that others are not brave enough to say? I will say that. So that was David's message. Let's go over a couple more. Boxing says, have you guys heard of El Maestro Doggy?
No, what is that?
What is that?
Can you tell us?
I don't know what that
Who's
is.
El Maestro Doggy? Sounds like a weirdo.
Erica coming through. Thank you, Erica, so much for your contribution. Adam, our boy. Hey, ladies, thank you for always shedding light on the truth on current events and the cultural shenanigans of the day. We're from different walks of life, but are in the same tribe. Love and appreciate you both so much, per usual. We love you, Adam. Thank you for supporting us always and forever. Look who's here. Sending love, ladies. I hope you're both doing well. Linda, your prima is about to Francisco Castle Myron in Colombia.
We're just talking about it.
Feedback on this.
Should I? We're going to watch it like right after this. We're gonna decompress and we're going to watch these.
And we want to give commentary.
So just so you guys know, we're not going to make it about this, but just so you guys know, the boys, Fresh and Fit, which is a famous podcast here out of Miami that likes to hold women accountable for whatever and shit on women and blame women for everything. They're actually over in Colombia. And Bella called me a bunch of times while I was getting ready to come to the podcast to tell me how these Colombian women are basically kind of like not giving these men the answers that they want to hear about being submissive and, you know, all sorts of different things.
It's
so,
a cell phone.
So I'm going to watch it and I'm going to talk about it.
You better believe. We will talk about it. I know it's going on now. Yeah. So once we get out of here, once we get out of here, we're definitely going to address it. I was telling Linda that I want to do an entire reactionary video to this this Fresh and Fit podcast in Colombia, because every single thing that the Passport Boys have the Passport Bros have claimed is a lie. And anybody who's been around Colombian women in Miami knows that every single thing that these men say about women in these third world countries is a lie.
Right.
I'm not going to speak for European countries, but I know that sure as shit is not the case. But we're going to have commentary
about
that coming up. Now, where do we start?
I don't want to nothing. Never mind. We already did this. The Carly hoax.
The Carly go.
So I want to talk about this because women will literally do anything for attention. And by the way, I was highly worried about this woman, this black woman. Her name is Carly Russell, who's starting to be the new Jussie Smollett. So pretty much over the weekend, a woman called the police over in Alabama, I think, Montgomery, Alabama. She said that she saw a toddler walking on the road and she stopped. Next thing you know, you hear screams and her phone falls. Police go. She disappears. Everyone's saying that she's kidnapped. Some people were speculating that they had seen a man on an ATV drive past her car. All sorts of things. Obviously, women, like if you went on TikTok, there are so many TikToks of people saying like women that like, you got to watch out. If you see a toddler on the road, like don't stop or like, you know, stay in your car, locked windows, like look around, call the police, all these tips because women were going to be kidnapped. Turns out that this woman shows up to her house, I think on Sunday night or Monday, and she's perfectly fine. Parents don't want to ask or tell the media or answer any questions. But little by little, we start finding out from the press releases that the police are saying is that it's basically a very suspicious event where this woman hours before was Googling the movie Taken, was searching how to start her own Amber Alert.
They ended up pulling up the camera footage and they couldn't see a child anywhere, so there was no child. Then they went into her search history. She looked up, how old do you have to be to get an Amber Alert? Like, what's the age cutoff for an Amber Alert? How to steal a cash register?
So these are the things that... these are the new facts released on Wednesday by police. She left work with a rope and toilet paper concealed. took a 600-yard car ride while on the phone with 9/11 following an apparently barefoot toddler on the side of the interstate. Recently searched online for terms including Amber Alerts and a film about abduction, which is Taken 2, had certain items missing from vehicle, including snacks she had purchased. Speaking to the media on Wednesday, Hoover Police Chief Nicholas Dernis seemed to cast doubt on the story behind the 49-hour disappearance. So pretty much where we are right now is that she's going to be the new Jussie Smollett. I think that she wanted what they're saying is that she wanted attention from her boyfriend. She was trying to get attention from her man, and so she ended up making up this entire stuff. Those are crazy.
This is exactly why I'm opposed. One of the reasons why I'm opposed to the manosphere ideology of dating, where somehow men have to date 50 plus women before they can decide which women is worth marrying. That's exposure to the possibility of 50 really unstable women that we talk about how the court systems are weighted against men all the time. That's undeniable that is the case. Yep. We've seen it firsthand happen. So we've seen the exposure and what happens when a man exposes themselves to crazy women just for the sake of sex. You can put yourself in a position where that woman can come after your business, come after your livelihood, come after your reputation, come after your family, come after your friends. Many such cases do exist of this happening. So I'll never understand the ideology of continuing to expose yourself to potentially more women when you've got women like Carly Smollett that's out here faking a kidnapping because she's lacking attention from the man that she's with.
Literally.
Who was probably over her shit already, her boyfriend, which is why he wasn't giving her attention.
Her boyfriend went from having 20,000 followers to having 25,000 followers. The majority of them are actually women. So there's a lot of funny TikTok circulating right now. You guys can go see. But with that being said, I do want to talk about Adam 22 and the controversy, because there were so many questions and comments about Adam 22 and his wife Lena DePlug. So if you guys don't know and you're just catching on to the degenerate clown world, Adam 22 and Lena DePlug are two porn stars, and he hosts one of the largest podcasts in the world, which is No Jumper, and Lena DePlug has an OnlyFans, and every single week on a Wednesday they interview a porn star and then they have sex on camera and then they post it on OnlyFans. So pretty much every single week they're having a threesome. That's 52 threesomes a year, right? Very recently, they got married actually back in May. And weeks before that, you actually heard Adam 22 in an interview saying that he would never allow his wife, or that she will never have to do a porn scene with another man because he was so rich. She didn't have to do that. Well, fast forward to July of 2023. And last week, Lena DePlug actually put out the first video sleeping with another man, getting banged by another man, Jason Love, who apparently is like a really big, he's like a really big porn star, a really big person in the adult industry. What I find interesting, because obviously the whole internet is on fire and talking about it and clowning on Adam, obviously deserving it because he's a cock and a clown. But I do want to, you know, point something out. Why is it that this type of relationship or degenerate partnership is only giving attention, or they give people so much shit about it when she sleeps with another man, but every single week as they're participating in these threesomes and then posting them online to sell on OnlyFans for people to watch him have sex with his wife and another woman, nobody says anything about that. No one talks about it. No one cares. It's like they're giving a free pass to have threesomes every single week, but her having sex with another man is taking it too far. Does that make sense? I find the whole thing repulsive. Either way, I'm not excusing one or the other. I'm just confused as to why one thing is more degenerate than the other.
I don't think that there's any degeneracy. Right? I just think that men are obsessed with the I think Destiny mentioned this when he was on our show, where he's like, there's this obsession with like the word cuck and like cucking. And like everybody wants to call everybody a cuck and everybody wants to say like you're this and you're that. Mm-hmm. I mentioned to you earlier, somebody, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who was like, oh, you can't tell me that Lena is winning. So Lena recorded.
Who's this, Lena?
Isn't that the name of his wife?
Lena. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Lena.
Yeah.
Lena.
You can't tell me that that Lena is winning because, you know, she's getting screwed by other men or whatnot. And there's no way that she feels good in her soul with that. I'm not thinking that a woman who has threesomes with her husband every single week and is an open porn star is thinking about salvation, first of all. I don't think that that's their priority.
Right.
And this is why so often we talk about the importance of compatibility versus preferences. A man like Adam might, well, maybe a man like Adam in theory, because he did say, my wife is never going to have to shoot a porn with somebody else. In theory, he might say, oh, I prefer that my wife only be mine. And I prefer that nobody else sleeps with her and that I'm in a closed relationship and we're monogamous and we have a family. In theory, he might say that. But the way what he practices is very different than that. Why? Because his life is very degenerate ridden. Somebody got mad at me in the comments today for saying that Fresh and Fit was degenerate.
Like, they are degenerate.
You guys can get mad if you want, but any man or woman that's advocating for promiscuity and telling men that they need to sleep with 50 women before they get married is in fact promoting degeneracy. Doesn't matter if you're a Christian, a Catholic, a Muslim, Tahitian, a monk, everybody's going to agree with that statement that encouraging the promiscuity of men or women is going to be by definition degeneracy. So when I look at somebody like Lena and people are like, oh, she's taking an out or Adam is taking an out. I don't personally, the way that I see it is I don't think any of them are taking an out. And here's why. By my standards, I would be taking an L if I was in that relationship, but neither Lena or Adam have morals like that.
Yeah.
So
they're both
what
godless.
Do they care about? They're married. They got each other. They got their baby. So God's beautiful blessing is still shining down on them. They're millionaires. They've got money. They've got clout. Who told you that that doesn't make them happy? Like, who told you that they don't feel entirely fulfilled doing those things? Why? Because they're compatible to one another. Right. If Lena wasn't open to having sex with other people or having him be a porn star or whatnot, then his podcast would suffer, because part of what he does on his podcast is that this is his old bit, right? To do this degenerate acts with his wife. So his lifestyle requires that he's with a woman like that.
Yeah.
So this, the concept that the manosphere has where every man prefers a virgin, you know, that doesn't have any trauma and that only they could have and the whole nine, that's not based on reality. And we watch it because within their own community, they contradict this consistently. They caught Pearl was making a comment about Adam and she was saying that like, oh, you know, what kind of man wants his wife to do porn and what kind of man wants to see his wife get banged by another guy? The kind of guy that does porn and bangs other women with his wife. That's the guy.
I'm just confused as to what type of women does he deserve if it's not for the wife that he has now. Why would, and this is a question that I pose for Tate Bros, right? Which I wouldn't put Tate and Adam in the same category at all. Don't even go there. But the reality is that would you want your daughter to date someone like Andrew Tate? That should be the first question to a Tate bro who defends them. Would you want that? And probably no. The answer is no. You probably wouldn't want your daughter to date somebody that was once in the porn industry, who likes to have sex with a bunch of women, who thinks the material world is the world, who wouldn't necessarily marry your daughter because he wants to have multiple wives, multiple children. And hey, props to him and whoever wants to live the lifestyle, you're free to do so. But would you as a man want that for your daughter? Now, I don't know the relationship between Lena and her family, but I can't really think that
it's a healthy one
and somebody that would be proud of their daughter spreading her cheeks on OnlyFans. for the world to see. I think it was actually pretty disturbing. I called Bella and I said, you know, it's so sad to hear that a woman married her pimp, because that's who he is. Adam 22 is Elena's pimp. I don't know how much money they got paid. I don't know if there's some sort of back end transaction. Right. I think the saddest part, it's going to be their daughter. They have a very young daughter. She's like 2 years old. She's going to grow up at some point. She's going to be out in the world. People are going to talk about this. So if you hear Adam talk about how they're going to break this down to their daughter, I think he's like, you know, at some point we're going to be like, oh, isn't mommy beautiful? Like, look, mommy's a model. There's so many people that like mommy's pictures on the internet. And, oh, she does like a little bit of lingerie and she does this. So they're basically going to groom their child into accepting that the mom is a porn star. And a prostitute, for that matter. Well, not a prostitute, but yeah, porn star. It's just all around disturbing. Nerva, but at the end of the day, I'm not really sure what other type of women he deserves, if it isn't her.
It's a conversation that we have consistently. It is what they deserve. It's mm-hmm. the same thing like the men in the manosphere that say that all women are hyperemis and that they're all gold diggers, the size of the shovel is just different or some stupid shit like that. It's what it is that they say. But then at the same time, they value themselves not by their integrity or their character or, you know, how they show up as a man and being able to, they put their value in whether or not they drive a Bugatti, whether or not they have access to a lot of women, whether or not, you know, they've got over $1 million, whether or not they're in Dubai. Like, these are the things that they value in themselves. Mm-hmm. So then if that's what you value in yourself, your Bugatti and your millions, no. Then don't be shocked when the women that you come across also value you for that, because that's what you're working on. That's where you're putting your energy and your effort into, is to having more Bugattis, having more millions, having more Rolexes. So don't be shocked when the women that you come across are impressed by exactly what you've been working on, because yeah. It's not your character. It's not your dignity. It's not your connection with God. It's these materialistic things. So what ends up happening? These men end up attracting the very women that they claim not to want.
Yep.
Because those are yep. the women that value that. I probably should have been. Well, I'm married to a lovely man, so I'm not gonna say that. But during my 20s, it was a turnoff to me to have men. You know that in Miami, yeah. That's so often. Like, they'll purposely leave out the key of the car that they drive, or they'll purposely take out
come with a car that's not theirs, right? Rent a Lambo for a day for $1,000 just to show off, and they don't even have $1,000 in the bank.
Or when they go out to the club and they take out the wad of cash, and then they got to put all of the hundreds in the outside before they can get to the smaller bills. Like, small things like that, that just growing up in the city, you see men showing off their money. And I think I'm a good girl. Maybe I don't know. Maybe some incels on the internet that don't know me might disagree, but I think that I was always a good woman.
We're all little ladies.
Just an old little lady. But I remember that it was such a turnoff to me to see a man engage in this behavior where they felt that they could grab my attention with material yeah. things and with money, because it made me feel cheap. And because it made me feel cheap, it made me reject it. So that kind of man could have been interested in me, but I, a good woman that did not want him for his money, was turned off by his behavior. Who do you think was turned on by that kind of behavior? The women that were excited to see the $100 bills on the outside of the bank, or the women that were like, fuck it, I'm just going to get into the Lambo for the first day and I don't care. So it ends up being self-detrimental to their own dating value, to their own dating market value, because what they put emphasis on is the things that are only going to be valued by the very women that they don't like. Which I think is, again,
Vivian says they pay 50-50. She said, I could stay home and you pay. He told her, nah, go get the money. So are you talking about Lena and Adam? Vivian.
Why? This guy's like, so y'all aren't gold diggers. No, we're not. A lot of women
No, unfortunately.
Are not
gold, a lot
unfortunately,
of people,
we're not. We're here.
Unfortunately, we're not.
We pay for our own fucking studio. You think that we couldn't have, we were gold diggers, like some fucking old ass rich Republican guy that would just want to pay for our studio time because we're two Latinas from Miami? Right. We could have had that. Like, we pay for our own shit. No, we're not gold diggers. I'm married to a carpenter, a humble man. We're not. And I want to go back to something that I brought up in the last episode that's important. A lot of you need to pick up a dictionary and look at what hypergamy actually means. Hypergamy isn't always related to money. I gave the example last week and I'll give it again. Hypergamous to me was that my husband came from a family that was married. Both of his parents were married. His grandparents were married. No one in his family has ever gotten divorced. I come from a broken home. To me, it was hypergamous that because people that come from a dual family, from a dual parent household, tend to be more better off in life, tend to be more better rounded, tend to want to work on their marriages, tend to want to be better husbands. It was hypergamous of me to go and marry my husband thinking that there was value in it for me because he came from a two parent household. That was very much hypergamous and not tied to money. So you guys need to pick up a dictionary on what hypergamous actually means. Yes, women are hypergamous by nature, as are many female creatures in the animal kingdom seeking safety from their male partners. The problem is that biology pisses you guys off and you're resentful towards women for having the submissive role that requires you guys to step up as leaders.
Putting the bigger bills on the outside of your money rule is just more practical. I get that some people might want to do that for God, but some of these just can just turn into a witch hunt. I don't understand that, Nathan. But I do want to say, who was it that got divorced? So, moving on.
Are we done? Are we done with Adam? There was so much to say. What are your thoughts, guys, on Adam? On Adam, would you guys let your wife have sex with a random person on the internet? I'm not thinking that most people would, but again, it all goes back to compatibility and your lifestyle.
I mean, look at the situation that Tate is in, right? The way that he was luring in this woman was by doing the lover boy method. So he was technically first trying to date or pretending that he wanted to date this woman, fuck these women, and then basically convince them, if you want to be with me, you're going to have to start working with me. And what does working with me entail? You're going to have to start doing porn on camera. You're going to have to start doing OnlyFans. So I think a lot of times people don't realize how these men are putting themselves in the situation. I just had a friend, haven't seen him in a couple months. I just saw him 3 weeks ago. He said he was having the worst week of his life. He had been depressed. He didn't want to eat. He's now seeking legal counsel, which I help him get legal counsel. And you'll never guess why. Really, really nice guy. Business owner. Makes a ton of money. Young, 27 years old. And he was engaged with an older girl. She was 34 and he was 27. She moved to Miami for him. Long story short is that they got engaged. And months later, he ended up breaking off the engagement with this girl. She had to go back to Texas. Now, immediately upon ending the relationship with his fiance that they had been together for 5 years, he got a new girlfriend, a very liberal, free-spirited girlfriend. And he fell for this girl mostly because she was what he perceived to be more attractive than his ex-fiance, who was more sexual, who was funner, who was, I think she was younger than the fiance, but not younger than him. Long story short is that she ended up being a psycho person who bamboozled him into moving to California, into first moving to like a random beach in the middle of nowhere, then like a forest in the middle of nowhere, and verbally abused them, physically abused them as well. And when he left her because he couldn't take it anymore, the horrible situation that he was in, she proceeded to try to ruin his life.
Shocking.
And the way that she wants to ruin his life is by defaming him and claiming that she was raped and horrible, horrible things. So now we are, or he's in the process of hiring a lawyer because she emailed his entire company, including the females, investors, every single employee at his company, alleging that he is a rapist. And these are the situations that good men, because he is a good guy, he may be a little bit retarded, but he's a good guy. And these are the situations that men put themselves in. You had a good, and I told him this, I said, you had a good girl on your side, right? That you wasted her time knowing that she was older, first of all, proposed to her, made a commitment to her, and then you end up breaking up with her. And then you go for the crazy psychotic girl who's just, you perceive to be hotter and you want to have sex and fun. And, oh, we had sex 8 times a day is what he said. We had sex so many times a day. And she tries to ruin your life. Now she's trying to ruin your life. Now every single girl and person in your company got an email about fake rape allegations. And now we're looking into getting a very expensive lawyer. I mean, it's just a shit show.
You know who doesn't have to worry about fake rape allegations? You know who doesn't have to worry about fake human trafficking allegations?
Anthony Cavazza.
Good married men that found one good woman and said, wow, how lucky am I to have a woman that loves me, wants to take care of me, wants what's best for me, somebody that I could trust. Those men don't have these problems. They don't have to worry about their porn star wife having sex with somebody else on camera. They don't have to worry about these girls sliding with a homie. They don't need to worry about these things. And this is the side of casual dating that the Manosphere doesn't talk about, because since it's a movement for incels, unfortunately, I understand that there's a lot of things that they do say that do ring true. And the world is in such desperation for true male influence, true strong male influence, that the desperation is so deep for these young men that they latch on to the closest thing to it, which is the Manosphere right now.
So,
but in itself,
that's that. It is weak. Speaking of dating older women, our girl Sofia Vergara is getting a divorce from Joe Manganiello. I think that's how you spell his last name. They're getting divorced. Sofia, I think, is a few years older than him. She just turned 51 years old. I think he's in his 40s. But they met 7 years ago. Beautiful, beautiful wedding. He actually was the one that was chasing this older, fine MILF. It was him, the one that was madly in love with her. I remember the whole story back then. Anyways, all to say that allegedly the reason why they're getting a divorce is because he wants to have children and she doesn't. She, just for the record, she does have a child. She was actually a very young mom.
She was a young mom.
Right. And she doesn't want to have any kids, right? So,
but this wasn't a secret.
No.
Like, this was something he asked her to marry her, she was already clear on the fact that she didn't want to have any additional children. And he insisted. And now he's in a position where he is not happy because he realized that he does want to be a father.
And by all means, he should be a father. He needs to procreate and pass on those genes. I tell you that much. So I agree with him. He needs to procreate and he needs to. But here's the thing, right? It's like, why do you, this is a conversation that you have prior to dating someone. This is a conversation that you have before you marry this person. And by the way, I've seen many such cases when younger men really try to go after these older women. It happens. We know couples, you and I know people, we know. And at the time, a lot of these men aren't really thinking with their heads. They're thinking with their dicks or they're thinking with their heart, believe it or not. And they don't care. They say they don't care. We don't care for children. I don't care. I just want to be with you. I don't care. Many such cases. In my family, many such cases, only to find out 5 years down the road that indeed you do want to pass on your seed and your lineage as you should. So my question is, why do they
choose
well, to I put themselves in this situation.
Women are always told choose better, but when men choose wrongly, nobody puts the accountability on him. For example, we've got AJ, a fan favorite on the chat, saying, no, she didn't want his kids, vile woman. Sofia Vergara is 51 years old, bro. She's ready to be a grandma. She doesn't want to be, she doesn't want to
be
someone's mom.
She may be a grandma. I'm not even sure.
She might be. Like,
well, maybe they know something we don't know. Is it just that she didn't want to have his kids? Are you sure about that? Does she want to have somebody else's kids?
I know for a fact that she did interviews, public interviews before them getting engaged, where she talked about how she was done having kids. She didn't want kids. This isn't a Joe thing. This is, okay, she was done having kids.
I'm going to Google.
51 años, caballero. Like, that's, it's, she's not... She looks great, no argument. We talked about this, I think, on the chat a little bit when we were making comparison to the fact that 51-year-old Sofia Vergara is absolutely hotter than Pearl Davis. But then we also have the other side where I've heard some of the gossip sites say that she was partying too much. Partying and
she's
drinking.
Colombian. Those Colombians are right.
Those
Colombians.
You know, and I think that. Then this goes back to the other side. Sofia Vergara is not the average woman, clearly. We're not even going to try and talk about her as if she was.
And we're not telling you to date a 51-year-old. Not telling you to do that. Because we know how you guys are.
But I think that this is where these individual examples come in, where men are like, oh, any woman over 40 years old that's single is miserable. And I already got to ask yourself, like somebody in the situation like Sofia Vergara, she's beautiful. She can date all the younger men that she wants because there's going to be plenty of them around. She's a millionaire. She's wealthy. She's famous. She's successful in her career. She's respected. A woman like that, you really got to ask yourself, the same way that there's men out there that feel like she already had children, so it's not like she's going to miss out on that. There's many men out there that will argue, well, when I get to this point in my life where now I can date all of these different women, then I don't want to have to, you know, not date all these women. I want to date them. Well, Sophia's kind of at that point, which who are any of us to actually say that she wouldn't be happier single? And it's hard to make the argument that she couldn't be. I'm not saying that she is, but that she couldn't be. Because again, if she's got all of her friends that she wants to hang out with and she's rich and she wants to drink and she wants to go to parties and galas and events and red carpets and that's her vibe and Joe wants to have a family and a white picket fence and do that, they're in two very different points of their lives. Once again, the importance of compatibility. Who's to say that Sofia's going to be miserable because of this divorce? Like, she could very well be very happy being plus 40. How many women don't you hear stories of that were maybe married to a very abusive man for 20, 30 years, and then in their 40s, they get a divorce, and they're just happy to be free and be out of that abusive situation. They're not unhappy that they're alone. They know what it was like to be in bad company and are not necessarily unhappy. I'm not advocating for women to go their own way like men do, but I think that with a lot of these things, there is no standard because there's so many different things that come into play.
I just found online that allegedly one of the things that the source said it's the reason for their divorce is because they actually never had much in common. And this probably also goes with culture differences. If you follow Sofia Vergara, she's very much with her family all the time. Every single time she goes on vacations to Italy or wherever she goes, she takes her uncles, her aunts, her family. They are party people because they are Colombian, and particularly where she's from, which is La Costa, Barranquilla. They're party carnival people all the time. So it's one of those things
that
where
can be shocking for a white man.
That could be very shocking.
That could be very shocking for a white man.
That could be very shocking for a much more calm white man. But I just, you know, I don't think they're right when they think that all women who end up alone later, especially when you have that much money, are miserable. They're not. A lot of women would actually tell you that they're much happier
when you've
after
got,
the divorce. Don't quote me on that. I'm not encouraging that at all.
But I think it does depend on what makes that particular, like, unfortunately, sadly, feminism has actually ruined a lot of women. Yeah. And they might, there could very well be a woman that's been raised around feminism her entire life that doesn't, if she does very well for herself, doesn't necessarily care because She can still date or she can still keep an active life or whatnot.
Well, at this point, the best thing for her would be to find an older man who already has children, doesn't want to have any more children, and then they get to just live the rest of their lives traveling, working, or do whatever they want, versus trying to get another younger man who doesn't have children, and then she's going to run into the same problem. Don Juan, thank you for coming.
He's going to go watch Sound of Freedom. Let's talk about that a little bit.
I'm just kind of over, honestly, I'm just kind of over the conservative movement and the undying questions about everything that happens. I guess the controversy for Sound of Freedom is that there's an investor, Carlos Slim.
The conversation is that there's an investor called Carlos Slim that's been criticized by Donald Trump that has connections to the Clintons, that he's the main investor. And then it seems like that seems to be the biggest problem. You guys can tell us in the chat from what I've been gathering. This is where the bigger questions are coming in from. And then, of course, we've got like the QAnon type of connections that by guilt by association, like we were talking about. Here's what I want to say about Carlos Slim that's actually important. Timelines matter, context matters. The number one, seemingly for those of you that are unaware, the money didn't directly come from Carlos Slim. In fact, this all comes from an interview that Tim Ballard did, in where he said that a part of the funding came from the Carlos Slim family. It appears that it was his son, Juan Slim, that was in fact the main investor, that was in fact an investor in the movie and not Carlos Slim directly. But I want to go into the conversation about Carlos Slim because I think it's important. During Donald Trump's run for 2016, he made comments about Carlos Slim and his connections to Hillary Clinton and the cartel in Mexico and could potentially connections to, I don't know if he said human trafficking or whatnot, but definitely connections to the cartel. And these were statements that Donald Trump made about Slim in 2015 during his campaign. However, what I haven't seen a lot of these conspiracy theorists and kind of truthers talk about when they're discussing these theories around Carlos Slim is that Donald Trump actually met with Carlos Slim not once, not twice, but three different times between 2016 and 2017, and actually said that he was a wonderful guy, that they had made Carlos Slim had wonderful things to say about Donald Trump. He was a guest in Mar-a-Lago with Donald Trump. And the funding for Sound of Freedom doesn't come until 2018. I want you guys to consider the math on that because I think the timelines are important. And if we're going to make Carlos Slim the main bad guy in this, you have to ask yourself, why is it that Donald Trump gave this man entryway and said good things about him and basically started changing the perception in light in which at least he wanted his followers to think that he saw Carlos Slim? And I don't think that people dig enough into these things. They just see that a content creator, some of which are absolutely operatives that are only here to drive a negative commentary on anything that patriots do to move the needle forward. And you can watch it and see it for yourself. These people will go against any single win that conservatives have, and they'll go against it very sneakily by saying, oh, well, it's controlled opposition. It's not real progress. Sound of Freedom is the top-rated movie in this country, despite the fact that it's only available at a handful of movie theaters. It's not in every movie theater. A handful of movie theaters that they had to fight. And the entire country... We did see it last year. Which is something also worth mentioning. We saw it last year at the America Policy Institute event, which is the institute that Donald Trump works closely with to handle all of his lawsuits, all of his legal issues. When you realize that that's the organization.
Well, no, you got to rephrase because I don't want you to say the wrong thing. Because no, the American First Policy Institute, which was founded by all of the Trump alumni, Chad Wolf, Brooke Rollins. I mean, so many people with power and money. They actually have sued the Biden administration. That's
correct.
How they sue.
Correct. They don't sue
so, for
Trump.
Example, they've sued for the vaccine stuff. They have sued for things at the border. All these legal lawsuits are extremely, extremely expensive. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars, sometimes even millions of dollars. And this is only possible because of the Trump alumni and the Trump donors who are willing to give money to do that. So last year, we were invited to an event here in Miami for the Hispanic Leadership event. And that's where we saw the Sound of Freedom. So we actually got a very good access. We're able to talk to Eduardo Verástegui, who's actually in the movie, but he's also a producer of the movie. It was a studio, Angel Studios, very small studio that helped produce this film. And he actually talks about how it's taking so long because Hollywood didn't want to touch it. So it's disappointing when I go on Twitter to see all these morons saying, oh, it's Hollywood our friend now. It's Hollywood our friend now. Well, guess what, moron? The movie was literally dropped by every single Hollywood studio. They wanted nothing to do with it because of the content of the film. That is why it's independently funded. If you actually go to Angel Studios, you could actually see a section with all the movies that they have either released or are going to release and the opportunities for funding. So you yourself, the people watching this, can actually go and, did you know that? They can actually go and crowd surf for other movies that they're about to like film or release or whatever it is. I don't even care to engage in it. I've completely stayed away from it because I got tired of the conspiracies from the right. I got tired of when it was like the Travis Scott, when it's this, when it's that, when it was Kanye. Kanye came out with Jesus King right before COVID in 2019, and it was a beautiful album. And I understand that Kanye is a very complicated person and a lot of times even contradictory. But Kanye wasn't asking you to give him money to start a church. Kanye wasn't asking you to listen to him for the word of God. It was literally a city called Jesus is King. No other artist of his caliber has ever created a single piece of music that has no cursing, straight worship music with a choir, just literally praising God and Jesus Christ.
Right. And then we somehow take that was a problem. And then
that
they're like, the color of their robes, it's they're red or like whatever. And then like they start with all this conspirational talk where it's like, fuck, like we can't have one freaking win without
people coming in and ruining it for all of us.
And I think that, again, there's a heightened sense of paranoia. The movie is the number one movie in America, a movie that shines a light on a true story of actual sex traffickers getting caught in Colombia. This is not some made up storyline. Right. If you haven't seen our episode, if you scroll down into our videos, you'll be able to see our interview with Gabriel Verona from Our Rescue. The day after a mission that captured a prolific pedophile, that not only was he a pedo himself, but he was an activist for to lower the age of consent and make child pornography legal in Mexico. Like, these are true actual stories of monsters that are being taken out of the street. Then I hear people say like, stop sending them your money. Guys, Our Rescue doesn't just use the money to rescue these kids. They then place the kids and their entire families somewhere away from the traffickers. They give them brand new identities. They give them lives. All of that takes money. And then here's the thing. A lot of the people that I hear complaining about this, not one will volunteer for an organization. They're so quick to tear down. And this is always my thing. Before you catch yourself talking bad about an organization that's doing something for trafficking, election integrity, running for politics, before you do any of that, I'm not asking you to trust the organization, but before you do any of that, ask yourself, what the fuck are you doing? What organization are you starting? If you don't trust anybody, that's fine. Start something. You do something. Get together with a group of your friends and start something that represents something that you can trust. If you feel that what's out there right now is broken, then you start something. But people don't ask that. It's very easy to sit courtside and take down and find things that are wrong.
Right.
Finding things that are wrong. And I mean, these people go out there and specifically do these digs looking for bad connections. So it could just be that you one time used to frequent a restaurant that was owned by a friend of Hillary Clinton, and now that's it. The same thing that they do, what I said on Anthony's Live, because Anthony did do a great show on this. 250,000 people were affected by the Haiti hurricane. Bill Clinton was president at the time. The Haiti earthquake was a huge deal.
Huge.
Everybody wanted and needed to help. Haiti needed the help of us, of Americans, of the world coming together. Everybody that went to Haiti for that earthquake is not a sex trafficker.
No, that's hard. That's crazy.
Everybody that worked with Bill Clinton, who was the actual president at that time, leading these initiatives, that went over there thinking, I'm going to support. A bunch of countries
sent their paramedics and sent their firefighters, including Israel. By the way, Israel has like one of the best rescue teams in the world. The same with the Mexicans. So it's just really interesting. That's why I've kind of stayed away from all the conspiracies, because it's just gotten too much. I do want to say something. It wasn't about Sand of Freedom. It was about one of these the Sims supporters. Yesterday, Donald Trump held a viewing of the Sound of Freedom at his golf course over in New Jersey. And you had some DeSantis supporters say, well, oh, just because Donald Trump sat down and watched this movie, then all of a sudden he is somehow fighting for children and yada, yada, yada. And it's just like, hold on a second. I didn't get to it. I didn't even respond. But let me just say something for those of you who don't know, or maybe you weren't a Trump supporter. Maybe you don't follow the law or whatever. Maybe when Donald Trump was president, Donald Trump, along with his daughter Ivanka Trump, actually worked hand in hand to create and put so much money behind organizations that help children get rescued from the hands of traffickers. And actually, Donald Trump is the first president that wanted to end the Flores Agreement over that Bill Clinton put in place. So if you guys don't know what the Flores Agreement is, pretty much back in 1991, there was all these kids showing up to the border without parents, that they would claim that they were going to be trafficked or killed or whatever back in their home countries. As a result, they created a law where basically if you are an underage child and you present yourself at the border and you want and you want asylum, they have to take you in. They have to process you. If you're underage, you cannot be turned away by law, right? So all these kids were coming here, and what was happening is a lot of times they'd come with families as well, and they have to keep these families together. And what we found out was that these traffickers were using that loophole, those legal loopholes, to traffic children into the United States of America. It is still actually happening right now because Trump wasn't successful in repeating that law. Because the Democrats' argument was that if we repeal the law, we were actually not going to help these kids that were allegedly being chased by gangs, or were going to be kidnapped or whatever it is. So this assumption from DeSantis supporters or whoever may be, that the only reason why Trump now is some sort of human trafficking advocate, or he cares for children because he watched the movie, that's actually not why we say that. We say that based on policy. We say that based on what we saw during the first term of the Trump presidency and the work that he did with Ivanka Trump and whatnot. It was actually Donald Trump who sat at the first State of the Union back in 2019 and said, 1 in 3 women are raped when they're coming to the border. A lot of time they're not only raped, but they're killed. They get their underwears and they hang them in trees as a trophy conquest. Okay. And not just at the State of the Union. To children.
Not just at the, he did it at the United Nations too.
Right.
He did it at the United Nations, not to mention the executive orders. There were several executive orders for trafficking victims as well.
Right. So, you know, when we talk about Trump's human trafficking and whatever you want to call it, it's about policy. It's not about him sitting down and watching a movie, The Sound of Freedom. I just wanted to say that. And then if you guys watch my story today, we're about to wrap up. But for the girls, if you watch my story on Instagram, Wake Up with Linta, I talked about my hair today. It was an interesting conversation because the number one question I always get from people is, how do you keep your hair healthy? How do I grow my hair? You have beautiful hair. And I always give girls tips. I don't gatekeep. And one of the things that we recently discovered through a study was that women sabotage each other's looks. And the reason why I bring this up is you guys know that we've been kind of playing around with our content when we also do a lot more cultural commentary. We've been talking about the manosphere, all these misogynists. We're talking about the women in the manosphere like Pearl and others. And what I have found out through Twitter, because I'm very active on Twitter, as you guys know, is that there's all these desperate housewives that are giving horrible advice to younger women and are actually trying to shame younger women into accepting less than they deserve, and at the same time trying to sabotage how they look.
Well, Pearl's not even a housewife.
Well, it's not just her. There's other housewives. Yeah.
There's others. Women are like that with one another.
Women are like that. I let girls know you have to be careful. Don't go cut your hair with another woman. I'm sorry if you're
especially
a stylist.
Especially if you're pretty.
I'm sorry if you're a stylist.
Look, this is going to be an unpopular thing to say because pretty girls aren't supposed to say things. When you're a pretty girl, you need to be extra careful because sometimes you'll have girls that are very pretty and they're very humble about it. They know that they're pretty. So they try to downplay their prettiness or like downplay the attention that they get around girls that are less fortunate looking.
Right.
And you think, well, they're less fortunate. I want to be nice. I want them to feel good or whatnot. Sometimes those women are the most hateful and resentful ones. So you have to be careful about the people that you let in around you and that, more importantly, that you take advice from. This is part of the reason why we so strongly oppose any woman taking advice from somebody like Pearl, who is not doing anything right to help you get a man. So,
but in general, even the girls that are married, forget Pearl, the women that are married on Twitter, because boys don't do that. Boys are very honest with each other, right? And somebody tried to challenge me when I said yesterday, don't listen to women with bad taste in clothes. And a man came and he said, I disagree with you, yada, yada, yada. And this is obviously a generalization. But today I point out, I said, are you going to actually listen to John Fetterman with the way that he dresses? Do you think wearing a hoodie to Congress and shorts and looking like you are going to go to a basketball game in the corner of your house, it's appropriate for Congress? Do you think that that man has a lot of value to tell you? Or the fact that he's depressed and he literally had to check himself in a rehab? You guys got to understand something. There's some stuff that I say that may sound cruel or harsh, but it's truth. And women don't tell each other when they should be telling each other, hey, you will look better with this color. You will look better with this. Maybe you should lose some weight. Maybe you will look better. Not as a diss.
This is what the manosphere
says. But to look
out
for each other. No, and they're right. They're right about it. Because the study said that hairstylists, and again, it's happened to me. I've been in this earth now for a few years, where I would go to women's stylists and they wanted to chop off my hair. Or same with girls. Like, you should cut your hair. Why do you care if I fucking have my hair down to my ass?
Yeah.
Why do you care?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And absolutely. It just
no, and
made
it's for
sense.
Everything. And like, you know, you'll have hateful girls where you'll ask, like, does this look good? And they'll be like, you look great. And it's not because they're being nice and they don't want to be rude. It's because they want you to go out looking ridiculous or looking ugly. Or,
right.
Oh, you look better if you gained a little weight, or you look better if whatever, or you lose weight and they'll tell you, oh, you're too skinny. Hateful things that are cloaked
right.
in what seemed like honest friendship feedback or whatnot. So women,
especially with the trap stuff, like by all means, I'm not a girl. I mean, I dress well. I think sometimes today I'm wearing a hoodie. I don't feel too well. I feel bloated because I just got my period. But I feel like I dress okay. So it depends on the occasion. Sometimes I'm going to look a little bit more sexy. Sometimes I'm going to be a little bit more covered up. As I'm getting older, I do change the way that I dress, a lot more sundresses, things of that nature. But I'll tell you something. I'm watching these desperate housewives give women advice, right? And it's like, you need to dress more modestly. Women are just... Look at Anthony. And when they, you know, they're telling these girls you need to dress more modestly. And I don't disagree with that. I actually agree that there's beautiful, modest outfits, elegant outfits. I love turtlenecks for a reason. I think turtlenecks are one of the I have so many turtlenecks. You have no idea, like every single color, because I think they're so elegant and it looks beautiful. But these girls are literally telling young girls to wear fucking dresses that the Amish would wear, or you look like the wall print of the Ramada Inn. Like, no, that's horrible. Like, it's not sexy. Your husband's not gonna like that. If you're single, men for sure are not gonna like that. And you literally look like you're about to fucking milk a goat. Like, it's just not. It's not attractive. But it's not pretty.
You know what it is?
And they're doing that on purpose to sabotage those girls.
They are doing
it. Don't wear makeup. Don't wear makeup. Don't do your hair. Let your grays come out. Just be natural. What's next? Are we going to grow off our armpits too? Because natural? We're like these women are sabotaging the younger girls. Well, I just know
because
about it.
They're resentful because these are women for the most part that haven't necessarily ever been conventionally attractive. So they in their life, they're not necessarily used to getting a lot of male attention. So then they have these platforms now where they're getting this clout for what? For being wives, for really what their husbands gave them, for being wives. Somebody made them a wife, and now that's where their clout comes from. So now they take that and they shit on the women that they've resented their entire lives by like, haha, well, at least I'm married and I'm and you're not married.
No, they literally think that being married gives them another position and I'm
authority,
like
authority and superiority and power. And
it's really weird.
And they're seeing that somebody in the comments said like, oh, the word incels is just used to turn people down. No, it's not. The word incel is a very true thing. There are a lot of men on the internet that are not having sex, therefore are incels.
Yeah.
And are mad at all women for their lack of accessibility to women to have sex with.
Yeah.
And because of that, I'm going to continue to say incels because a lot of the time this commentary comes from people that are very obvious virgins, don't get play. And they think that they can sit on the internet and be like, you're a three, you're a four, you're a two. You don't have access to any of these women. It's why you're so mad to begin with. But these incels love these women that blame other women for their problems. Oh, women don't have sex with you, not because you're lacking in your looks or you're working on yourself or what you do. No, you're not the problem. The problem is those pesky women that they're not modest and they want you to have money and they want you to do all these things. And then they create this, you know what I think about? You know that image from Game of Thrones?
Which one?
Where she's getting carried up by all of the slaves.
Oh, yeah.
You know that image?
Yeah.
That's literally the housewives being carried up by the incels.
I brought up Melania Trump yesterday, which is obviously an outlier, but I'll be honest with you. Like, there's no Miami Ho that doesn't have a man. And you could say, oh, there's a simp for every girl or every hoe, or that man is good or that man is bad. It doesn't matter because at the end of the day, you judge people that aren't married or don't have a relationship as, well, you're still single. So if the question is, are they single or not? They're not. I have so many of these Insta models that follow me because they're Trump supporters. You got to understand something. A lot of these women who are showing off their body online for clicks and likes, whether it's for bathing suits, whether it's modeling, whether it's for personal fitness or just straight up hoeing, a lot of them are making $500,000 a year, sometimes even more. I know one because she has a huge online store. The company just grew to $3 million. That's just on her brand. Now she has all these other contracts with Bang and modeling stuff. So if this person and her husband, by the way, are making close to $2 million a year, why do you think they're going to vote for a Democrat? They're not. They're gonna support Trump, or they're gonna support a Republican candidate just based on taxes alone. They don't really give a shit about conservatism. They're not about conservative values. It's all about fiscal conservatism for them, right? And I you know, to be honest with you, where I don't agree with, I've always been more on the shy side of things, which is why I could never really do like a twerking or ass video and stuff. But
the world wouldn't know what to do with themselves.
But I do have to say that I find it very funny to watch men online say that these women end up alone. And my story yesterday about hoes winning wasn't necessarily to encourage women to go hoe, because if not, I would have done it, especially when I was younger. But it's just to say, like, you live in this is reality. Men, the reality is that there's a lot of men that do love hoes,
whether or not they admit it or not. A lot of them aren't even.
Mexican dad doesn't love hoes, but Mexican dad is also an exception to the rule.
Well, no, Mexican dad is at home with his wife and his kids, prioritizing that.
Right.
A majority of men that are out here in the dating market, yeah, they'll prefer a hoe instead. They'll turn down a good wife to mess around with a hoe that's a baddie or hotter, or it's going to get them more credit amongst their male friends because she's hotter. That's
somebody said prostitution should be legal, and prostitution is legal in a few states. I mean, in Las Vegas, it's legal. You can actually go to the Bunny Ranch in Vegas and get a prostitute if you want. So there are some states where prostitution is legal. I'm
pretty Nevada's
sure.
one of them.
I don't know if I completely agree with that. I'd have to see like statistics and more to it. Like, for example, when these people make the argument of, you know, sometimes they get mad at something a woman says that even done it to us. It's like, repeal the 19th Amendment. Like, repeal it. Like, so, you know, I'm not really sure if you can actually go to the Supreme Court and tell the justices you should repeal the 19th Amendment because women are emotional. You're not going to be able to get away with that, guys. You're going to actually have a legal take on changing voting laws, period. Not just for women, but perhaps for other minorities, and perhaps even to do some sort of like, if you own a property, like how it was back in the day, only in the military, if you own a property, yada, 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 can vote. Let's see. Let's read some of these comments. TradCon are forgetting that it took Trump and New Yorker to make the GOP party cool again. During 2016, TradCon are losing the culture war to busy bending the knee to Israel. I actually saw somebody this week, and I won't mention her name, but I called Bella and I told her, one of these girls that she's more on the cultural commentary, dating relationships. And she was saying like, oh, women ring conservatism because you see MAGA girls with like bathing suit pictures, and then some have OnlyFans and da 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 da. And I'm like, listen, once again, we need to understand that there's cultural conservatism and then there is fiscal conservatism. Donald Trump, as he has said many times, and I think he just actually said it a few weeks ago, it's like, I'm not really sure if I'm a conservative. I'm just a common sense guy. And that is the reason why Trump is up in the polls. That is the reason why, if you saw, I have a viral tweet right now of a liberal, a white liberal girl in LA talking about how she has woken up and she's now a Trump supporter and she's an ex-liberal. So those people don't suddenly become pro-Christ, pro-God, pro-go-to-church every single time, pro-there's modernity. They're actually just awake to what's going on with the political sphere. Maybe COVID woke them up. Maybe it's what's happening now after Biden took over. Maybe she did vote for Biden. I'm not really sure her story. But my point is that we don't gain 10 million more voters like we did in 2020 by being some sort of moral police about what people wear, how they act, what they don't act. You can do that. We can do that on our platforms and comment on, you know, this is hoe behavior or this is, you know, degenerate or whatnot. The reality is that that's not what Trump is about. And it was never really what MAGA was about, because you still live in a country with freedoms and individual liberty. And a lot of times that individual liberty means accepting things that we don't agree with and don't like. The same can go with religion. You may not like what the Muslims have to say or do. The same thing with the Jewish people or Buddhists or whatever it may be. But it is the right to practice that religion and do so. So,
Guys, we're getting ready to go to the end of our show. Please, if you haven't liked, like, we want to pose a question for you guys, for those of you that are in the chat, our loyal soldiers. Viewership tends to go up a little bit later on. So would you guys like to see our show start a little bit later?
Okay, we started it at 10 p.m.
If we started from 10 to 11, are you guys going to freak out and be like, no, I need to sleep at that time? Or is that a time that would work better for you, particularly for our listeners on the West Coast? We want to get your feedback on that. So please let us know in the chat. We did have a couple of super chats that came in at the end that I want to just give attention to. Emery says, Gen Z is highly interested in Sound of Freedom. I'm working to get a public viewing at my college in Georgia for my classmates to watch for free. I'm willing to fight the institution for this. Oh, love you, Emery. Such an inspiration to what every Zoomer should be doing. And we get enough of people, enough of Zoomers like you, we're probably going to have some kind of shift in this country, and it's going to be your generation that does it. Fairy Princess coming through and showing us support like she does every show. David showing double support today.
Wow, David.
David was like, just coming in, he's like, I got to get this off my chest. And he says, hypergamy can backfire. My mom, 23, Spaniard, married my 38-year-old Swedish businessman dad when he moved to the U.S. to study English. He lost his business, and she ended up going to medical school to provide for the family.
That's
and then the divorce,
I was talking about,
20 years later, she paid him out. Wow.
Many such cases.
Look, at the end of the day, I'll tell you what. I am married. And my husband and I went through a difficult period in our marriage in 2021, where we were actually separated for a couple of months. And I'm not going to get into a whole lot of detail about my personal life because you guys don't give a fuck. But I will tell you this. One of the most valuable things that I have done for my life is work on my marriage. Our relationship is so much stronger. Our commitment to one another is so much stronger, knowing that we overcome together. Relationships, marriage is hard. You're going to come across hard times. You're going to come across times where you're going to think, I'm better off alone, or I can find someone else. The one piece of advice that I can give you guys is, if you get married in front of God, and if you make that commitment, if you get to that point in your life, and don't make it about a wedding. I know that many women do. It's not about a wedding. If you truly got there and you made that commitment to God, work on your marriage. I don't think that, you know, so many things would be easily solved if marriage wasn't so accessible, if marriage wasn't the answer all the time. And I think that that's something that the Manosphere does get right, which is that nowadays people are very quick to leave when things get hard. And marriage is not supposed to be like that. Your marriage is actually going to be defined and grow stronger by the things that you're capable of overcoming together. So if there's one piece of advice that I can give people in that situation, is, I know the Manosphere says don't get married, is make better decisions about the people that you marry, and make sure that, like me, I was hypergamous in marrying a man that came from a two-parent household because I knew that he was going to value investing into our marriage. So make sure that you're marrying somebody that wants to invest even when things get hard. With that being said, guys, I think Erica also came through with a contribution. And I think that that's going to bring us... Kenneth says, Vivek Ramaswamy, why not? As long as we don't get another number 43 again.
Who's 43, Obama?
No, that would be, Obama was 44, so Clinton was 43.
Clinton was 43.
No, okay. 43 was...
Obama, and then Obama was 43 and 44.
But who came first, Bush or Clinton? No, Bush was before
it
Obama.
It was Clinton, Bush, Obama.
And then Obama, yeah. So 43 is Bush, got you. All right, guys. So let us know in the comments about that. Please share, like, subscribe to our channel. Ever since our Instagram page went down, our viewership has also gone down a bit. So we strongly depend on you guys to help us grow the channel. Your like, your subscribe goes a long way in doing that. Please don't forget to check out our sponsors at Century H2O. Support Patriots. By supporting them, you support us, and you also help support their efforts and their that we know that they're still having over in Ohio and in East Palestine. I think
that's it, guys.
All set for today, guys.
Thank you for tuning in. We enjoy this. I know it was kind of like all over the place, but we were just scanning the internet. That's something that actually Andy Frisella does on his podcast from time to time. And yeah, just if you have any suggestions on what you want us to cover next
format of the show,
format of the show,
the time
controversial stuff. Yesterday I had a live and it was pretty controversial. The boys were pissed off because I was you know, talking about Andrew Tate, but that's okay. We will see you next week. Thank you.
Bye, guys.